announced about $1 billion for the states and territories to support them enabling infrastructure for new housing through a new housing support program through Priority Works. So that's a little bit of extra money thrown to those territories to enable, I guess, the connection of those developments and that infrastructure in play as well.
So overall affordability for people, this meaning that more people are having to resort to state housing, whether that be for the shorter term to get back on their feet or for a longer term because of the larger life changes.
Welcome to Perth Property Insider, where you will learn how to grow your wealth and improve your life using Perth property. Our show is brought to you by Investors Edge Real Estate, the highly rated and award-winning property management, sales and buyers agency servicing the whole of Perth. Now, here's your host, Jared Mann.
Hi, Dwayne. Thanks for joining us on the show. Today, we're chatting through the recent state and federal budget and what they mean for Perth property. Does it mean much? Well, I guess we'll answer that today, won't we?
Yep, sounds good. Let's get into it.
So we all know we're in a critical housing supply problem across the whole of Australia, and none more so severe than in Perth here, where we're at an all-time low for number of properties for rent and number of properties for sale. And you only need to be a tenant or a buyer going out to a viewing the Savo, and you know, you'll probably see 30 or 40 people at most of these. And it's super difficult for anyone to secure a property. And it's really slowed up the whole housing market in many ways, because those that want to change over and move places are staying put. And that means less houses are coming up for sale because people are worried about finding accommodation to actually buy or rent in the meantime. And, you know, we only need to turn on the news each night and there's big problems, or we can go for a walk around our streets in Perth too and see that there's big problems with homelessness. And my heart certainly goes out to people that are either couch surfing or, you know, trying to get a spot in a caravan park, or at the very worst, living on our streets. So not a good problem for our governments to solve, and a very difficult one. Dwayne.
Yeah, look, totally agree. We do viewings and there's tons and tons of tenants coming, looking at the homes, cars parked around corners, and it is very difficult for them to find a property to stay in at the moment.
So when we actually look at the cause of this, well, the borders were shut across COVID. No one came in for a long period there. It was probably 18 months, 2 years. I'm not sure on the exact period, but we all felt trapped in our little bubble, and we were very isolated in Perth. Some of the other states had a bit more freedoms. Some of them had far worse freedom, thinking back to how locked up Melbourne was. And that's in part been a big reason why a lot of people have exited Melbourne and headed for safer or more flexible cities that did handle the crisis better. So Perth, arguably, we were trapped in our bubble and we got freedoms here. Couldn't go sort of anywhere else, but we at least got to have a bit of a normal life while all of that went on, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think back to those COVID times and not being able to travel and still being able to get out and about. And I looked over to some of my family on the East Coast and, yeah, they definitely were trapped in their little tinier bubble, shall I say.
Well, whenever the government puts a policy in place such as this, it has major effects on things. So you restrain the migration levels to basically zero for a period. They wanted to play catch up. They had a lot of temporary visa holders across the whole of Australia that were trapped here as well for that period. And but they've loved living here over that time. So, you know, they've all decided that they want to apply for being a permanent migrant and getting a spot here. Not all of them, of course. Some of them have gone back to their original countries, but that sort of distorted the figures on how many migrants we then had, following COVID. And what were some of the stats, if you want to take us through how we've been out for migration over the last few years?
Yeah, I think the net migration from overseas numbers is expected to decrease significantly. I think we're looking at about 528,000 in the 2022-2023 period to about 260,000 by the end of the 2024-25 period. So that is a large drop, I guess, in the total number of migration expected during that period.
So the government is starting to tighten things up a bit. A bit of that was obviously the groundswell of those temporary visa holders that were finding their permanent place. But in the part of the federal budget, they've announced that there'll be around 110,000 less overseas migrants over the 24-25 period, if we're interpreting all of that correctly. So it's pretty hard to wade through it all, but they're definitely decreasing the migration levels Australia-wide. And this ultimately is going to take a bit of the pressure off of the housing supply issue. But like, we're already got a major issue, so there's a big problem to solve regardless of reducing this by about a third on the levels that we've sort of were planning.
I agree.
So what is the federal government proposing to do to try to solve some of these things? Take me through one of the first measures, Dwayne.
Well, I think just to put some perspective into it, I don't think any of the things that they've mentioned are instant quick fixes. A lot of them are things that will take some time and implementation. And I think things in relation to this supply issue, the government's looking at developing a national housing and homelessness plan. I think that's about a 10-year strategy, which all levels of government will sort of come together and work together to address those issues. But again, that's really in the planning stages still. Nothing's going to happen this year that might change where we're sitting with regards to this supply-demand issue.
Well, I guess the wheels of progress take a while to turn when we're this far behind the eight ball, and they're big problems and difficult problems to solve. And, you know, at least now they're starting to work on the strategies and the blueprint in order to free up more housing supply. So one of the things the National Cabinet has looked at is a national planning reform blueprint with 17 sort of specific reforms that address lots of different levels of government. And overall, what they're trying to do is streamline the development approvals so that we can get more land created in the first place. They're trying to identify the well-located and development-ready land. So there's a lot of it just sitting under everyone's nose that needs to be identified, and what's the time frames on the different land areas so that we can get the stuff that's more ready out to the marketplace quicker. And they're looking to identify how housing can be built faster on sites with development approvals. So we've really needed a shove in the right direction towards building quicker for decades, arguably. In Perth here especially, we're stuck on our double brick and tile type construction. Will that ever change? Will this be enough of pressure to see people actually be innovative and create quicker building methods? And will the public embrace those? So I guess everything's driven by demand. And if there's enough of a demand for a quick house that's affordable, then hopefully some of the builders can start creating this. So, but anyway, at least they've identified at the National Cabinet level for this reform blueprint that they're going to try to improve that area as well. And they're going to ensure that state, regional and local strategic plans reflect their share of the $1.2 million new homes target. So they came out with this new homes target. They didn't have any idea how they were going to do it. At least now they're starting to put some strategies and actual points behind it. But is that going to help us over the next year?
Probably not for the next year. But I think that 1.2 million new homes was, you know, over 5 years. And the construction was to commence on the 1st of July 2024. I mean, that's sort of 5-year time horizon they're looking at. So, I mean, 1.2 million homes is not to be sneezed at. That's still a lot of housing. But, you know, that's over the next half a decade, that, and it really hasn't even started yet. You know, that's still another 2 months away. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out.
So, what were some of the other areas that the federal budget covered?
Well, I think just touching a little bit on the spending in relation to, I think they're putting, what, $89 million over 3 years from 2024-25 to support about 20,000 fee-free training places for new construction workers. So,
well, that's a practical thing. And, you know, I'd rather try to bring up as many homegrown workers as we can.
Yeah, but I guess the reality of that, it's going to take a couple of years for them to actually be able to pick up the tools in a skilled way. And then they start construction. So you're still looking at a couple of years before anything really, you know, touches home.
Yeah, literally. So what else is in the spending measures that are sort of targeted in solving this area?
I think they've announced about $1 billion for the states and territories to support them enabling infrastructure for new housing through a new housing support program through Priority Works. So that's a little bit of extra money thrown to those territories to enable, I guess, the connection of those developments and that infrastructure in play as well. So that's handy. And I think was it $423 million over 5 years to support the provision of social housing and homelessness by the state and territories, which I think is a good one because the reality is government spending on social housing has been low for many, many years now. And they're the ones that really could be doing a little bit more to provide a bit more housing for those that are in need.
Well, they're certainly falling through the cracks at the moment, and there's not enough, especially with the cost of living pressures and interest rates being a lot higher. So overall affordability for people is meaning that more people are having to resort to state housing, whether that be for the shorter term to get back on their feet or for a longer term because of the larger life changes. So what else has the government done to try to increase this supply? They've been tinkering with the options for foreign investors to have a lower foreign investment fee. So whenever a foreign investor buys a property, the fees are quite high still, because at one stage it was a lot more accessible for foreign investors, and then we've jacked up the fees, and it's really sort of killed that demographic and that demand from overseas. So I don't know if listeners know much about the build to rent sort of properties, but they're really just sort of in concept stage. There's one or two larger ones that have been released around the country, and this is where you picture almost like a super fund type larger corporate building on a large scale, a property to rent out, high density. We're talking about apartment type living, but in many cases the practical side we've seen over East is that the rents on some of these build to rent places have actually been higher than a lot of other comparable properties around. So it will contribute to solving the supply, contribute to helping the supply issue. And if foreign investors are encouraged to buy in these build to rent, you know, developments, that might help that get further legs and get off the ground. And there was other tax concessions announced for the build to rent type developments, allowing higher depreciation and a greater withholding or lesser withholding rate of tax to be applicable. So hopefully that'll start adding help, but it doesn't affect the mum and dad investor and what they can do. And it's probably only going to make a very small dent in the overall housing supply and only really provide a certain type of supply, which is apartments. So nothing terribly exciting there for anyone.
Yeah, no silver bullet, that's for sure.
So in summary, what would you say are the winners and out of all this? Is there any, and over what time period?
Look, I think really any aspiring sort of construction workers wanting to get in, learn the trades, probably what I see getting a bit of a benefit from this, you know, a bit of training, a bit of education, and government's paying for it. Fantastic.
Well, I think everyone probably sees trades in a different, you know, light now, or at least I do anyway. We originally thought that AI and machine learning was going to take away blue collar workers, didn't we? We thought, robots are going to be replacing our construction workers. But now it's pretty clear that the real type of jobs that are under threat is more the white collar workers. The stuff that AI can do is certainly mind blowing already. We haven't even probably seen anywhere near where its potential is going to go to. So I think personally, people need to start viewing trades and construction workers as being a lot safer type job that's a lot more future proof than potentially a lot of the knowledge workers go. And so my little 2 cents worth on, if you're listening, and I'm trying to round up and inspire some listeners to get into the construction industry. This is not a paid ad, I should say.
Yeah.
So look, longer term, I think, you know, home buyers are going to benefit from increasing supply, but it's going to take some time to actually benefit people. But hey, they're working on it, so that's something. All right, so how about we switch across to the state budget, and what were some of the higher level highlights that might impact the household there, Dwayne?
Oh, look, I think, what was it? WA reported those 3.2 billion surplus, which is not too bad. Pretty good, I would have thought.
Well, we're faring very well compared to the other states. And so, I mean, it's certainly better when you look at Victoria and how bad their state finances are, and potentially going to need a bailout at some stage from the federal side. And, you know, they're raising a lot of taxes. They're basically any tax that they can raise, they're raising it. And a lot of those things are really putting off investors. And I think it's very encouraging that because we're in such a surplus, you've seen that our reforms to our Residential Tenancies Act and have been a lot more palatable and a lot more reasonable. And we just had one of them announced, the first of which come out today, being that we can't encourage rental bidding or use from pricing. And it's worth me just mentioning this because there's a fair bit of misconception around that first change. The government loves coming out with its big top headlines, rent bidding disallowed or no more rent bidding. But the reality is that any tenant can still offer more for a property. And a lot of people, I think a lot of people reading it will think, oh, we're banned on offering more for a property. So the reality is that agents just can't encourage it and can't use a from price, but tenants can still offer more, and that's going to still strengthen applications for those that do. So will it that really change too much? Not really, I don't think so.
I wouldn't have thought so either. You know, particularly if you've got a room full of tenants and they're all wanting to apply for the same home, they're going to ask questions, and they still do. You know, how can I strengthen my application? Well, I'm now bound to not say, you know, offer, put your best foot forward, right? But at the same token, they're going to read between the lines. Like, I was thinking, should I say something like, well, I can't ask you to put more money, you know, but...
No, well, you, as your licensee, you won't be saying any of that, Dwayne.
I won't be saying anything like that.
We're going to work out a... Because this has literally been announced today, we'll be working out in our team meeting today exactly what we do say. And we've just got to be very careful about being seen to encourage any sort of increase. But reality is a higher price rental application is going to be more attractive for an owner, and those facts aren't changing, and tenants can still offer more. So
correct. Yeah, so I think with the current supply demand issue, the low vacancy rates, tenants that are desperate for homes will potentially offer more money still. And yeah, like you said, Jared, you know, investors aren't going to turn that money down if they're able to reap a little bit of extra rewards from the current market.
But as I was getting to there, we haven't seen any changes announced for increases to land tax or increases to other taxes that a lot of the other states are experiencing. So kind of no news on that front here is good news, I think, and just keeping the playing field as encouraging for investors and home buyers to get into the market and to keep trying to solve this housing supply issue that we do have. And what were some of the other sort of little concession type things? Is the government throwing anything at us to try and win a vote?
Yep, $400 off your power bill. And I don't believe that's means tested either. So everyone, you get $400. You get $400. And look, it's just throwing a bit of extra money around to help those that actually genuinely need it with you know, the cost of living. But it is really just a little bit of a, I guess I've heard on the radio, sugar hit, I would argue, because the $400 is going to come and go. And yeah, it's just giving away some money to help people right now, but no real longer term sort of thinking towards it, I wouldn't have thought.
No. So let's break down the different groups and look at what are some of the other things the state budget is either helping with or targeting. So why don't we start with tenants at the moment? Obviously, vacancy rates, historical lows. Any sort of relief measures on the horizon there?
I believe the government's throwing about $400 million towards building and refurbishing social and affordable housing. And that's sort of done across the metro area, you know, ideally close to the Metronet lines, which actually makes sense, right? Yeah, public transport and infrastructure. And although that might take a little while for that sort of refurbishment and building to occur, having a bit more of a budget towards that will enable us to have a few more social housing properties, affordable housing, and help tenants in the long run too.
Well, we did mention the tenancy reforms that are coming out. We'll probably release another podcast episode in the coming months when we're closer to the ultra specifics on the more meaningful reforms. But some of the other top level ones that they're working to is, you know, only being able to increase the rent once a year. And tenants are getting some more freedoms when it comes to what they can do to a property and how they can keep a pet. So nothing terribly worrying for most landlords in that. But again, nothing really to help the supply issues right now.
And just to last on that, they haven't exactly set a precise date of these changes either. So like the news that dropped last night, this morning, we knew it was going to happen sometime in May, but no specific date. And then surprise. So I think you'll see that happening over between May and July, with most of those changes taking effect during that period. But we'll confirm the dates when that occurs.
Well, there was one sort of news headline grabbing change announced, which is giving, I guess, a few properties back to the rental market and increasing some supply for tenants. And that was the $5,000 being offered for those that are converting from a short-term rental or a vacant property onto the long-term rental market. So not a bad $5,000 to put in the pocket if you're thinking about doing that anyway, or if you're on the fence about it. And especially if you've got a vacant home, well, you might as well rent it out, get some rental income and get a $5,000 payment for doing so. Thank you, state government.
Yeah, and what's the stat? I think 150 investment property owners have signed up to this now, and I think they're expecting probably another 100 more coming. So at least there's a little bit more stock available for choice, but still, to me, a bit of a blip in the radar when we've got all-time vacancy lows, but every little bit helps.
Exactly. So now let's go to home buyers, and is there any changes announced there that's going to help them?
The biggest one, I think, is the stamp duty and the stamp duty free threshold. So I think the median cost of buying a property now in Perth is around 620. Maybe Jared can give me a bit more of an insight on that, but I think that's the last statistic I saw. And I think we're moving that stamp duty concession from anything 0 to 400K, basically no stamp duty payable, and then from 450 up to 600, there's a limited relief beyond that stamp duty. Anything over 600, though, you're paying your stamp duty. So if you're buying a typical house in Perth at 620, you're not getting this. But if you're looking at maybe more units or villas for a first-time buyer, something a little bit smaller, then there might be a little bit of relief in sight.
Well, I've seen what happens when, again, we put in place a policy. This is really in the home opens and stuff. We're now going to see buyers very reluctant to go over that 600K mark. So if your property is being sold for 590 to 620 or 580 to plus, you'll find that I think a lot more buyers are going to cap out. And it's funny when I try to break it down for them, because the actual extra amount might only be a few hundred dollars, but psychologically they're like, oh, I can't spend over 600,000. But of course, as a good sales agent, I'll break it down to them and say, you know, do you really want to miss out on the property of your dreams, or that you've told me for all these reasons that you really love, for the sake of punching in the calculator $200 or $300 to pay that little bit extra or whatever the amount is? If you're listening to this and you are a first home buyer, worth looking at the actual numbers rather than just making blanket high level decisions about capping your purchase at that. So
yeah, and look, I think this is another measure that sort of, I wouldn't say increases demand. It's supposed to support those first home buyers, but it does in one way press on the side of demand more than the side of supply, which seems to be the issue. You know, we don't have enough supply, you know, and we're not really doing anything, I think, enough to make a critical turning point for that supply just yet.
Mm. Well, in addition to trying to free up supply in the metro area, the government's announced that they're putting $35 million towards trying to free up supply in regional areas. And, you know, it does make sense, especially with the remote working abilities. And we've got these regional towns that certainly have decent infrastructure and amenities. And if someone goes, they can spend, you know, their whole life there. And so regional areas like Broome, Karratha and Kalgoorlie, that's where they're looking to try and free up the land where it is available. So hopefully that'll encourage and make it possible for some more people to go regional. But again, it's not helping the people that want to live in Perth Metro. So, but, you know, it might help them in that every person that moves regional is one less person that needs to be housed here too. So, yeah, when you think about it that way, it could help. So, finally, there was a number of things mentioned to try and tackle the homeless challenge that we're all facing, not all facing, that we're facing as a society here in Perth. The government's tipping in $92 million to fund services for those without a roof over their head. So hopefully that really makes a difference. And it's hard to sort of tell, at least from our outside view, how big the problem is or whether this, how much this is really going to go towards solving it. But at least they're allocating what seems like a reasonable amount of money to try to make some sort of difference. All in all, is there any major exciting changes that are going to move the needle? Not really. Longer term, at least they're working on strategy and progress towards freeing up more supply at a state and national level. And it was notable, at least to me, that they're trying to they're reducing the migration levels a bit to ease that demand. And I think that would have been probably seen as fairly irresponsible if they just kept bringing in migrants at record levels, you know, and they're like, oh, we don't know why we've got the problem. We're not solving the problem and we're continuing the problem at the same level. So at least that's, but we do need the migrants because we've got an aging population. We need to pay for their retirement and their all their Medicare and all the other government benefits that everyone has access to when they need them. So migration is very important to sort of keep us financially in a good place. So on that final note, thanks for joining me, Dwayne, and running through all that. And hopefully our listeners have gotten a few takeaways. At least they know where we sort of stand in Perth with the state and federal budgets. So catch you on the next one.
Thanks, mate. See ya.
Yeah. Just a reminder, the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature. As we don't know your specific situation, you should always seek professional advice before taking any action. For free market reports on your suburb of interest and other helpful resources to grow your wealth, make sure you join my property investor update at investorsedge.com.au/join. And finally, make sure you're a member of our Perth Property Investment Facebook group. To be part of the conversation with other like-minded investors, get help to your questions, and get a feel for what's going on out there in the market. I'll see you in the group.